Erica Morgan on What's Up with Your Electricity Bill. And today we're going to teach you how to read your electricity bill on episode 18 of the Tiny Climate Challenge podcast.
I'm Maella Manassian, your host on the Tiny Climate Challenge podcast. This is a podcast for busy people who want to save the planet by completing one simple eco challenge at a time. Let's do this. Please visit tinyclimate.com to access all episodes, show notes, freely subscribe, and contact us. Now, for the first time in my life, I truly believe my dreams are possible, Hi, everyone. Today, I'm super excited because I have a very special guest expert in the studio, Erica Morgan, and we're going to be talking about electricity. What's up, Erica?
Was that my cue?
Why don't you take a moment to introduce yourself to our fabulous listeners?
Great. Well, thank you, Maella. I'm so pleased to be here. My name is Erica Morgan. I am an independent clean energy consultant. And I have been since the mid-90s, well before there was a clean energy industry to work in. And before that, for 5 years, I served in state government in two different states. In one case, I was a deputy commissioner of energy in the state of Massachusetts. In another case, I was a deputy commissioner of environmental protection in the state of Maine. And in both of those areas, in both states, in both cases, I was very active in electricity industry restructuring, a very big topic that leads directly into what we're talking about here. So I moved to San Diego in 2011 and live right in downtown San Diego, where I'm able to walk everywhere. And I live near the bay, and we just are so happy to have left the cold Northeast behind and now live in this beautiful sunny climate. I work with nonprofits on electricity issues, including how we can buy more clean energy through our electricity bills, and in particular on what's known as community choice aggregation, a complex term for something that gets down to how do we buy more clean energy.
Yes.
I also work with a variety of other different kinds of clients that want to know how they can reduce their impacts using solar energy, like churches and other organizations that really, you know, they're aware that they could be doing more than they're doing. And we work together. I help facilitate their thought process, their research, and their action so that they can implement cleaner energy solutions. When I started consulting in the 90s, it wasn't then really acceptable to talk about climate change. Those were not terms we were allowed to use. We were told, if you want to reach people on these issues, clean energy issues, don't talk about climate change, but you can talk about clean air. And so a lot of my early outreach on clean energy issues was in the context of clean air. And where does your electricity come from? And how much pollution gets put into the air when you're burning fossil fuels of various kinds. So that was the nature of the discussion then. And that fed right into policy discussions about energy and where does electricity come from and who gets to make these decisions and do individuals get to choose where their electricity comes from. So that's kind of where it started for me. And in the year 2000, I started a nonprofit that was dedicated to helping people in the Northeast, particularly in my home state of Maine, where I was working at the time, make more informed choices about where their electricity came from. And we basically said, okay, if the electricity system is going to change so that we can all choose where our kilowatt hours come from, we want to choose cleaner ones.
Yes.
So I've been working in this whole notion, this whole area, the space, whatever you want to call it, of green electricity and clean electricity choice since the year 2000. And I always ask people, always start by asking them, gee, have you looked at your bill lately? Let's take a look at your bill.
Which is what led us to this conversation today, right? We just happened to be hanging out together and we got onto this conversation, this topic. We thought, let's do it. I knew I wanted to do a podcast with you because, as you just heard, she has a phenomenal resume and she's just such a super person to be with. And we were really fortunate to cross paths. We both were on the board and you were the executive director, actually, of the San Diego Energy District. And so that's how we met. And you have changed my life for the better. I have learned so much from you. And that's why I was really excited to have you come on the show today so you could talk about what you know and what you've learned over the years with our listeners and, frankly, with myself. And we thought there's a lot of electricity. When you're talking about electricity and where it comes from, like, it can get very complicated very quickly. And so we thought, let's keep it really simple. But when I look at my bill, there's nothing simple about it to me. All I do is look at the dollar sign and I say, how much do I owe this month? And if it seems like it's in line with what I had paid the previous month, more or less, then I don't think twice about it. I just, you know, pay the bill. And actually, I have to confess, I have solar panels now. I got them a couple years ago. And so I don't pay anything. There is a fee. We'll talk about that the energy company assesses. But other than that, I'm really fortunate in that regard. But I feel like, you know, prior to getting solar panels, that was pretty much the way I approached my electricity bill every month is, you know, is it in line with what I normally pay? And if it's not, then I would kind of take a closer look, but still not really understand that much more about it other than just that the dollar figure was higher. Yeah. And ouch, that hurts.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I have to confess too that my husband pays the electricity bills. It's been a long time since I've looked at my own electricity bill. So this was actually a very good reminder of what you can learn on your electricity bill. And yes, it is a little complicated. And I think one of the challenges for us here is going to be, this is a kind of a visual exercise, and yet we each have bills to look at in this conversation, but our listeners may or may not have their bills right next to them. So when we go into the nuts and bolts, I will describe what I'm looking at on our bill here in the San Diego area, which does come from San Diego Gas and Electric. Many bills are set up similarly. There are some variables depending on whether the state has changed its electricity system such that the individuals have choice. And that may be something we can remember to come back to at the end, because there are degrees of choice that will be coming to San Diego soon. But for now, in California, there are some things that we don't get to choose. And there are also some commonalities about the way the bills are set up, both across all three of the investor-owned utilities in the state of California, and shared in many ways in many other states similarly.
Before we hop into diving into looking at our bills, can we just talk very briefly about where our electricity comes from? Because I guess that's the other thing. I think most people just flip the light switch on and they're just happy that the light comes on and they're not really thinking about how that electricity actually got to their home and from what source and all that. And I know it varies state by state, but let's, I guess, stick with California.
It varies state by state. It also varies utility by utility. In California, we are, and this is one of the reasons why I'm here in San Diego and in the state of California, because the policy in this state is really leading the transition for our country in terms of where does electricity come from. So we have had a number of very far-reaching measures pass in Sacramento that have said that the utilities must provide certain levels of renewable energy as part of their portfolios. And this is called the Renewable Portfolio Standard. Now, many states do also have renewable portfolio standards. Those are set up in different ways and different things qualify. But in California, there is a requirement that we move gradually from 30% renewable to 50% renewable. And then a couple of years ago, we had 100% renewable pass. But I think that year is not until 2050. And this is something I wish I'd looked up. But so we are moving, and we are moving very quickly. And the three investor-owned utilities in California, in addition to San Diego Gas and Electric, that's Southern California Edison and Pacific Gas and Electric, are all required to hit different levels of renewables. And they're right now fond of saying that they have met or exceeded where they're supposed to be today. But for many of us who are really concerned about climate change, they can't move fast enough. And we would all like higher levels of renewables sooner.
Yeah.
And that is something that our system will be allowing us to do before too long.
And the magic of the internet, I just looked it up. So you're referring to Senate Bill 100. It is a bill that will put California on the path to 100% fossil fuel-free electricity by the year 2045.
2045.
Yes.
And here in San Diego, we have a very aggressive climate action plan, which says that the city of San Diego will reach 100% renewably generated electricity by the year 2035. So already 10 years ahead of the state requirement. And again, that will be facilitated by the city's move to a community choice aggregation, which will enable us all of us who are motivated to do so, to select 100% renewable energy more quickly than that.
Power to the people.
Absolutely.
All right. So we talked a little bit about where energy comes from. Now, there are different sources of energy, right? We're still burning fossil fuels.
Oh, we are still burning fossil fuels.
We're still on. We're still getting our energy from natural gas, some fracking, too, apparently, in California. It's coal. We still are getting some energy from coal, very little, but there is sources of energy from coal as well in California. And am I missing? What else am I missing?
Well, there are, in some states, fuel oil.
There is
nuclear, but there's also, you know, fossil fuel, fuel oil also. And that was one of the things I was just looking through this bill for. In some states, they have to disclose on the bill what the mix is.
Yes.
In other states, they have to tell you every quarter or half year what the actual mix of their fuels in their portfolio is. I think in California, if you want to see this statement, it's called an admissions disclosure statement. You have to go on the utilities site for it.
So but it's not on these bills.
It's not on the bill. Okay. And I don't think it is sent to you the way it is in some states, but I think you can. It is required. The commission does require that there is disclosure of what their actual mix is and therefore what the emissions from their portfolio is in over a particular period of time each year. So that is information that is available if you want to go dig it out.
Okay. We will definitely have to look into that because I'm curious.
That might be something to put on the show notes if we were to dig up what the disclosure statements for the three California investor-owned utilities would be. We could certainly do that.
Excellent idea. We will definitely look into that.
Are we now ready to get out our bills?
Yes. I have mine right here.
Okay. Well, I would propose that we go through these a page at a time. I will describe the different sections of the bill. So if anyone is following along at home, they'll have an idea what we can see at least.
Okay, wait. Hang on.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone, go grab your bills. We'll wait.
Hit pause and come back.
And also, I should mention that I have, well, I mentioned this earlier, but I will remind everyone, I have solar on my house. So I brought my residential bill. You live in a multifamily residential, so you brought a copy of that bill. And then you also have another bill that you brought?
Yes, I brought a bill that comes from one of my clients, and it's a commercial institution. So that's, I mean, it's a church, but it's treated as a commercial account by the utility. So I wanted to get a look at how that bill differs from a residential bill.
Great. And then just for fun, because I recently moved to Mexico, I brought my bill from Mexico as well, which I gave Erica a sneak peek of on the way over here. So if there's a chance, maybe we'll talk a little bit about how that bill differs from our electric bills here in the U.S. Okay.
Okay. All right. Well, then starting right out on the first page of your bill, it begins, of course, with each person's, each account holder's name and address and account number at the top. Again, this is a San Diego Gas and Electric bill, but I think in the basic layout in California, all of these bills are pretty much laid out the same because the individual investor-owned utility is regulated by the California Public Utilities Commission, and they do tell them certain things like how to lay out their customer-facing material. So below the top line of the bill, we'll see an account summary. And then below that, we'll see a line that says summary of current charges. And for folks who are interested in just the bottom line, this may be as far as they get. Mm-hmm. This is where the billed amount is showing. It also shows the billing period and the number of kilowatt hours used in that period. So again, I live in a small apartment in downtown San Diego. And for the billing period of July 31st to August 29th, I used basically 279 kilowatt hours, $81.93. So that's what it shows.
Guess how many I used?
Negative. You used negative.
Negative 420 kilowatt hours.
That's so awesome.
I'm an energy philanthropist.
You are a generator. You are.
It's one of my three G's, yep. Being generous.
Yep. The other thing that is visible on the first page of the bill, and this is, again, in the center of the bill, above the section that is the coupon where you would send it in if you were paying by mail. But on the right-hand side of the first page, there is an electricity usage history graph. And this is particularly interesting in San Diego Gas and Electric territory because in the summer of this year, in June of this year, they changed the structure of the rates. So what we can see on my chart, probably not on yours, is that the different categories of charges changed in the month of June. And then lo and behold, in the month of August, I've got a huge spike.
Oh, no.
Which immediately made my eyebrows go up because we were on vacation that month. So I don't quite know what's going on there. Anyway, below that chart, so this chart enables you to see for each of the months of the year past exactly how many kilowatt hours you used. Mm-hmm. So for comparison purposes, if I used 179 in this particular billing period, I used basically about that amount in most of the other months of the year, except this anomalous August reading, which I have to go look into.
I have an anomaly too. So we sized our solar system so that we would be producing more energy than using. But in February, it looks like we actually used more than we produced. And I'm guessing maybe it was cold that month and maybe we were running the heater more than we normally did. But that's unusual because we are negative all of the other months. So yeah. That was interesting to me just to look at this little histogram, I guess.
Yeah, that could very well be what happened. And that's one of the reasons why it's useful to have year over year information is so that you can sort of pursue what was different this year. Were there more people in the household? Was the weather colder? You know,
actually, my mom was in the house and yeah. She does tend to run very cold. So I'm sure that's what was going on.
Okay. Well, that is the kind of information that is in this little electric usage history chart. Okay. Then I propose we turn now to the second page. And there are a number of things.
I never turn to this page, by the way.
Yeah. Well, this is where the guts of the matter will be.
Yeah, this
be.
Is where it starts to get a little more confusing.
It does start to get considerably more confusing here. So again, from the very top banner, which is where your account number still shows and the date of the bill and everything, then the first section is called Detail of Current Charges. And here you see essentially a summary of what they're going to spell out further mm-hmm. below on the page. So it will tell you what rate schedule you're on. And that's actually labeled, in my case, time of use residential. and there's a bunch of code there. So it tells you exactly what rate schedule you're on. It also says climate zone, and that's also something that may be a little bit different in certainly in San Diego and in parts of California than it is in other states where I've looked at bills. They don't necessarily break it out by what climate zone you're in, but it makes a big difference here.
So do we have different climate zones in San Diego?
Oh, we certainly do, because the coastal zone, which is the westernmost edge of San Diego, is different from the inland zone and, as you can imagine, the desert zone. So I think actually there may be four. Mm-hmm. But I'm forgetting what the fourth one would be.
And then are they charging us different rates based on what climate zone we're in?
They will charge you different rates, absolutely, because your usage will be different.
True.
So, yes, that tells them that. Now, you know, I shouldn't, that's something I may have answered too quickly, that they do charge from different, but I think they do, but then they also would show that in the time of use, you know, the residential rate. It's probably a subset of that residential rate class.
Okay.
So also in this section, there are, you know, it confirms what your billing period is, what your meter number is, and when they will come back out to read your meter. In many cases now, there are electronic ways to read the meter, so they no longer go
house to house
the way they used to. And in this case, what circuit you're on. That's all a detail that you probably don't ever need to know. But it sets up the following two sections. And this takes us back to what is electricity and how do we think about electricity. So most people think about, okay, when they turn on the switch, they want it to come on. You want the light to come on or whatever it is. And that is something.
I gotta charge my iPhone.
Right, exactly. Well, that happens because those little electrons are coming through the wire at a certain rate and into your device. So it's a function of the movement of electrons over time. Okay, so that is expressed as kilowatt hours. So that's one part of what gets electricity to your house. It's the kilowatt hours, is the actual energy charge that's coming through the wire and into your device. The second part is equally important, and it is the delivery charge. It's, okay, think of this as the wire that delivers the electrons to your device or to your light or to your house or your stove or anything else. There's a wire there. And the wire has a particular size and it has a particular voltage and it has a bunch of characteristics to it. And that is part of what constitutes the delivery side of the bill. That's part of what the utility has to size properly and has to maintain. Mm-hmm. So these investor-owned utilities, as much as we know and love them, do have a critical job in supplying the wires and the infrastructure that get those kilowatt hours to your devices. The bill then has two sections to it. And the top one in this case is called electricity delivery. And that's the charge they're going to charge you for getting each kilowatt hour to your property. The section below that is called electricity generation. And that's the payment that goes to whomever is generating those kilowatt hours for the energy itself. Okay?
Wait, can you repeat that again?
Yeah, this, like I said, this is where it gets confusing.
I understood the first part, the electricity delivery, but this, the electricity generation?
Electricity generation is the charge for actually creating those kilowatt hours.
Okay.
So if it's generation through the fossil fuel plant, that's charged at a certain rate.
Okay.
That is to say, the utility will pay a certain rate for fossil generation. They pay a different rate for their renewable generation. They're going to charge you an average rate that is calculated to cover all of their costs for all of the kilowatt hours that they provide and that you use.
Shouldn't they be paying me for my electricity that I'm generating?
and this is what's wonderful about your bill, because they are. You actually have a negative amount shown, but this is a fine point that we'll get to. They are paying for you because you are able to net out your kilowatt hours. And you, so you have a net metered bill because your solar system is putting kilowatt hours out onto the grid. You are a generator.
So that's what it means when we talk about net metering.
Basically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Got it.
So the generation portion of your bill looks very different.
Yes, because it
does. You have negative, whereas I actually bought and paid for 279 kilowatt hours this month. You produced 420 kilowatt hours a month, and you basically put those back out through the wires. They made your meter go backwards and give you a credit. That is one of the beautiful things about solar generation here. And the utilities are required to offer net energy metering, which means that when you buy electricity, it comes in and they'll charge you for it. But when you produce electricity, you push it back out through the wires, they will enable you to get a credit for those kilowatt hours. And it'll be the same amount. That's not true in all states, but it is true in this state. So back to the two components of the charge, the delivery charge versus the generation charge. Is that difference clear?
Yes.
Did I get that clear? Okay, so that's one confusing thing about the bill, that there are these two components of it. The other confusing thing is that here in San Diego Gas and Electric Territory, and I think increasingly throughout the state, there are also three time periods.
Oh, yes.
So we have on-peak hours, which are now have just changed to 4 in the afternoon to 9 p.m., right at dinner time. Mm-hmm. We have off-peak hours, which are 6 a.m. to 4 p.m. in the afternoon, and then again after 9 till midnight. And then we have super off-peak hours, midnight to 6 a.m. So in this way, the utility is going to charge you differentially for the time of your use, and that's what that rate classification stands for. So having walked through the details of the delivery charge and the generation charge, the bill then totals all this stuff up.
Yep.
Okay. And there are really two ways to think about the way the bill totals everything up.
Wait, I have a question about
sure.
Peak hours.
Yes.
Are the peak hours different if you're residential versus commercial? Or is it the same for everybody?
They do differ. And my commercial bill does show that they have a different billing structure.
Okay.
In that they only have two time periods.
Interesting.
They have on-peak and off-peak. They don't have super off-peak. Now, again, this is a particular class of commercial customer, also located in the coastal zone mm-hmm. here in San Diego, but they don't have super off-peak, so they don't get the break of doing the dishes after midnight or
right.
whatever,
yeah.
whatever it is.
Because I would imagine that the majority of their peak hours are in the daytime when everyone's at work, 8 to 5, 8 to 6.
Well, and this is the interesting change that SDG&E, and again, the three California utilities have pretty much done, is they are all shifting the peak hours to later in the day. Mm. And they will say that it's because of people like you who generate solar during the main portion of the day that they are awash in kilowatt hours during the daytime. So that is no longer peak. They get plenty of kilowatt hours. They're all solar kilowatt hours. So now when they really need us to conserve, they push the hours later from 4 to 9 p.m. But there is one other thing I wanted to say about the calculation on this bill. And we've talked about, you know, how SDG&E figures it out. They ask you, okay, how many kilowatt hours did you spend on the on-peak period or the off-peak period or the super off-peak period? And they calculate the delivery price for all those periods. Then they do the same thing on the generation side. How many kilowatts in each of those categories? And then they add it together. So they're basically never showing you how much does any one kilowatt hour cost me.
Mm.
So when you figure that out.
Did you do the math?
I certainly did the math. I see that my on-peak kilowatt hours between 4 and 9 p.m. cost me basically 32 cents a kilowatt hour for the generation. They cost basically 24 cents to get it to my house. So each kilowatt hour that I'm using between 4 and 9 p.m. is costing me 56 cents.
Wow.
That's over half a buck.
Yeah.
For those on-peak kilowatt hours. Now, the bottom line is less for off-peak. It's only 34 cents a kilowatt hour, or super off-peak after midnight. It's only 30 cents a kilowatt hour, 29 cents. But you don't see that looking at your bill.
Mm.
Unless you take the step of adding together the generation price and the delivery price, you really don't know what that kilowatt hour is costing you.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, I think, an important thing to do.
Yes, and I'm glad you did the math on that. And I'm really curious because I recently visited you at your house and I noticed you have a lot of energy-saving devices. And so I'm curious, have you programmed them to come on, to activate during these off-peak hours, or how are you trying to minimize your peak hour usage?
We, you know, do as much of that as possible. You know, the largest user in our small apartment is the dishwasher, because it has a heating element in it.
Mm.
And you definitely want to be sure that your dishwasher is not used in the peak hours. So after 9 o'clock, do your dishwashing then. If you have laundry facilities that you can also do later, that's another savings. There are a number of devices that you can use to program, you know, little smart switches, mm-hmm. or even smart strips, you know, that have multiple plugs in them.
Yep.
They can be programmed as well. So this rate structure that we have now here in San Diego is going to motivate many of us to get ever smarter,
yeah.
about how we shift our usage to after 9 o'clock at night.
I heard it's like the most expensive in the state.
Which makes it some of the most expensive in the country.
Yeah.
Because our rates in California are higher than in most parts of the country. So before we finish on the bill, there are a couple of other things to point out. We have pretty much finished with the complicated page two. And now there are a few other sections here, like on page three. There is detail of the charges. And one of the things that is true, not just in California, but all over, is the electricity system has become a vehicle for doing various kinds of publicly beneficial things. So there are a lot of extra little charges that get stuck in here. And these are detailed in a couple of different places on page three. But one in particular I want to point out is on page two of our bill, and it's called the DWR bond charge. And it is also set on a per kilowatt hour basis, and I'm paying big $1.40, you know, for that. It's not a huge amount. That is a leftover charge from the days when California did restructure its electricity bill, and several of the utilities did not do very well in that interval. And the Department of Water Resources ended up buying a bunch of electricity and making it available at a reasonable rate. This is the last few months of that charge. However, it was supposed to go away. But in the last legislative session, there's been a big discussion about wildfire liability.
Yeah.
Because the utilities are responsible for making sure that their wires are operated safely and they do not cause sparks, mm-hmm. and therefore cause fires. And all three of the California utilities have had difficulty with this. SDG&E's fires were some years ago, and they cleaned up their act. They have done a very good job now of running their transmission and distribution systems more safely. As we may know, listeners in California will know, Pacific Gas and Electric is in bankruptcy,
yeah.
over this issue. And in the last two legislative sessions, there have been bills passed over who's going to pay the liabilities of the fires that have been have been caused. And in this last session, a bill went through that basically said that DWR charge that's supposed to be going away, it's going to continue for a bunch more years.
Oh, wow.
And that dollar sign there is going to go into a fund for wildfire liability.
Now, I have a question because I didn't see that on my bill. Is it on there somewhere?
You know, that's really interesting that you don't have it here, because most of the charges that fit in this category, whether it's the DWR charge or what's indicated over on this right-hand side of page 3, decommissioning charges, competitive transition charge, you know, public purpose programs, all of those charges are called non-bypassable charges. And they basically, that's defined as a charge that you can't get out of, even if you do have solar. Now, if your solar goes back several years, and maybe it does, those early solar customers were able to bypass some of those fees.
That's what happened.
And that may be, so you are what's called a grandfathered solar customer. So that's a very good position to be in. Today, now, under the net metering rules as they exist in 20, I think it changed in 2018 in SDG&E territory and forward, those charges will be paid by net metered customers as well.
Yes. They send out, I feel like they try to trick you or something, because they sent out something about that, trying to get me to sign on to, and I said, no, like, I just want to stay how I was. And then eventually, I guess, I'll get rolled into this.
I think you were grandfathered for 20 years.
Okay.
But they did try to get people to opt into
the
time of use rate. And, you know, that is has been a big area of concern for solar customers, because it was not in your interest to come out of that grandfathered category that you're in.
Right.
And then last but not least, on the page 4 of the bill, there is another pretty helpful graph called Your Electricity Dashboard. And again, this is not on a solar bill, perhaps. Because what it does is
I have it.
Oh, you do have it.
Yeah.
Great. Excellent. Is it shows the usage, the average hourly electric usage for each hour of the day. So I can see in my household what kilowatt hour usage we have when it's not charging us 56 cents a kilowatt hour, and what usage we have during those peak hours. So that enables us as a household to go back and say, what's going on then? Gee, can we really eat dinner a little later and not turn the cotton picket stove on until after 9 o'clock?
Well, that's interesting, because when I'm generating the most, or when I'm using the most kilowatt hours, it is during those peak times, 6 to 9 p.m.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, my commercial customer here, it is an office and a church. So there are evening activities there. And what we see is they have a huge peak right at the hour of 4 p.m., right at the beginning of the peak hours. They got a big
I
peak.
I see that. Wow.
And they might want to think about that. And in fact, I know they are.
Yes. And wait, can I have a question though? So
yes,
I know,
please.
So I'm a solar customer, so I'm generating more electricity than I'm using on the whole, but I am using more electricity during these peak hours. So as a solar customer, should I be implementing some energy savings things in my house? I mean, I think when we have solar, like we stop thinking about conservation because we're like, well, I have solar. So
In fact, that is a very common reaction among solar customers. And in fact, it's why in many cases, when the solar system has been sized to provide 100% of the usage, in the following year, people are disappointed because they didn't get the savings they expected. Mm-hmm. The reason for that is they said to themselves, oh, I have solar. It's free. I can use whatever I want. And the actual number of kilowatt hours that they use goes up. So the answer to your question is you should absolutely look at how to reduce the number of kilowatt hours you use. Now, you're in a slightly different situation because, as you mentioned earlier, you oversized your solar system.
Yes.
So that it's going to produce enough for your regular usage and then a little more. Mm-hmm. So, but, you know, every kilowatt hour you don't use is another piece of credit that you will get going forward. So that's the way the net metered bills okay. work. You do carry your balance forward for 12 months, I believe. Mm-hmm. But I don't think you ever get a check from the utility. Is that correct? Mm. I think they just zero it out at the end of the year. I could be wrong about that. That is something that differs in different states, do it different ways.
You know, that's a really good question. I thought that we did.
You do get a check?
I thought so, but not a huge check.
Yeah.
I think it's just a credit on our bill is what we get.
Well, you get a credit each month, but at the end of 12 months, if you still have a balance outstanding, my understanding, I think, and I really could be wrong about this, but my understanding is that the utility will never cut you a check. They'll just zero it out and you get to start over.
Okay. I'll have to double check on that.
Yeah, I should probably.
I think you're
well.
Right, too. Otherwise, they would, because so many people have solar now, they would be cutting a lot of checks, and I don't think they want to do that.
Exactly. And it's for them, they and many others will maintain that they are paying you an unfair amount by allowing you to net out the retail price. So they will maintain that that's a subsidy and therefore they should never, you know, this is a policy that they would like to get out of.
Yeah.
However, there is a countervailing position, which is that you, as the homeowner, have put forward the capital to buy that system. You take the risk and the obligation to maintain it. That is generation that they do not have to come up with, so that retail rate is entirely a fair rate. And so far, the commission has acknowledged that.
Well,
position.
And that's why I say I'm an energy philanthropist.
That's right. That's right.
Well, how about really quickly just touching on my Mexico bill?
Well, this is so interesting.
You know, just your basic observations.
Yeah. Well, being that I cannot read it.
I know, it's not the best copy.
I can't read it because I don't read Espanol. And most of these terms are not in my native language. But what I did notice when going through this before is that they do not separate the bill out by generation and delivery. You are getting one bill for the kilowatt hours. That then is broken out by the level of kilowatt hours. Let's see, where is it now? So if I see this correctly, there was a baseline amount that you are entitled to of up to 150 kilowatt hours, and that is at the lowest rate. Then beyond that, for the next increment, you pay a slightly higher rate. And you said this was in pesos, so it's 50, it's half a peso, right?
Yeah, so it's interesting because that bill that you're looking at is, I think, a thousand pesos?
Yes, 1,000 pesos altogether.
So that's $57 a month.
Yeah, okay.
Which to me, I mean, when's the last time you paid a $57 electricity bill?
That is pretty good.
Yeah.
Well, and I think that highlights another thing that's very different about the system down there. It is a federal system. It's not, it doesn't vary by state or locality in the same way that our systems do up here.
And it also and they don't have time of use rates like we do. So if you just use beyond a certain level of kilowatt hours, then they just kick you up into the higher tier.
Into the next tier.
Yeah.
That's right. So you can see that. You can also see that there are some credits on the bill, but essentially the energy charge, which probably includes both the kilowatt hours and the delivery, represents about 80% of your bill. And there's only one, it looks like a tax or some other fee that is added on there. So I think that's a pretty simple system. Would that ours was that simple.
Yes. It would be good if we could simplify our bills. And I'm sure that's something that the utilities probably talk about and why they put in all these great little graphs and things like that.
We now go to what the future will hold?
Please.
Because there are some very exciting things happening in California under the heading of what is changing about our electricity system. And you, as a solar provider and energy philanthropist, represent the cutting edge of this, because as solar and clean energy technologies are becoming more robust and more common, as our understanding of energy efficiency is getting so much better and our awareness of climate change is getting so much heightened, and we understand that energy is a big component of this, and our interest in renewable energy is remaining high and getting higher at right the same time as there are many ways to do this with larger solar systems and community solar systems and, you know, megawatt scale solar systems, very large ones, and batteries that can bring this intermittent resource available to us all the time. As all of that technology is changing, people are much more able to employ it themselves in their homes and businesses, and they want to do so. Mm-hmm. So the utility system here, following the guidance from the legislature in 2007, has implemented a program called Community Choice Aggregation, which enables cities and towns and public agencies to band together to aggregate to become their own purchasers of kilowatt hours. Well, then they get to pick where the kilowatt hour is going to come from. And there are now 19 of these community choice agencies that are already operational in the state of California. The first one was Marin Clean Energy that started in 2007. And under California state law, everyone who is in one of those jurisdictions that has chosen to move ahead in this way is automatically in. When I was first doing this in the year 2000, it was every person had to opt in, and it took years and years to build a pool. Well, the California law is smarter than that and basically said, we want everybody in, and then you can opt out if you want to.
And I heard the opt-out rate is pretty low. Less than 10% or something.
Oh, my gosh. The opt-out rates are more like 3%.
Wow.
So the community choice programs that have formed, you know, they're conservative. The cities and towns that run them are conservative. So they will plan for an opt-out rate of 10%. But I'm not aware of any case where it's come close to that, because more people want to do this and mm-hmm. they stay in. And what that then means is that the program that's created there, whether it's, you know, Marin Clean Energy or Sonoma Clean Power or Solana Energy Alliance in our own San Diego area, the staff and experts who create this program and operate it are then able to choose where those kilowatt hours come from. And that enables them to choose to contract with more renewable energy providers, larger projects, and particularly projects in their own jurisdiction. So just a few weeks ago here in San Diego, the city of San Diego that has been looking at this and studying this for so long.
Well, and we've been working on this too.
We've been working on it for so long. The city council opted to go forward with four other cities in the San Diego region. So it will be a 5-city community choice program. And assuming that they, in fact, get their implementation plan done by the end of December, it will launch in 2021.
I want to stand up and cheer and scream like so loud right now. This is so exciting.
It's very exciting, because it means now that by working through our representatives on the governing board of what will be called, until it gets a better name, the San Diego Region Community Choice Energy Authority. We'll probably get a marketing name. But in any event, by working through that board, we will be able to have input on what kind of choices they make and how much emphasis they put on actually buying kilowatt hours from solar providers within the county of San Diego, or within it. Do we consider Imperial Valley to be, local enough Anyway, there are a great many very exciting things that can be done through this most flexible of mechanisms that we've now created or will be creating over the next few months and making operational in the next couple of years. So it's very exciting.
Yes, it's a fantastic opportunity. And I recently did an interview with another podcast guest, Dr. Phil Watts, and he's an energy developer. And we talked about how we have the opportunity to go 100% renewable energy now. We don't even have to wait. We have the technology and we can do this in our cities now if we choose to. We just need the political will.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's one of the things that the community choice programs represent is the political will. And what we have seen since the early days of Marin Clean Energy in 2007, you know, by the end of 2022, I think, 80% of electricity customers in the state of California will be served by a community choice program. And the 20% that are not served are, many of them are in the service territory of municipal utilities like Sacramento Municipal Utility District and LA DWP. Yes. Those areas are not eligible to form these programs. So when you think about that change, it puts in perspective the role of the current utilities, the investor-owned utilities. They are seeing their role change dramatically right now. And it may or may not be something that they're prepared for or excited about, but their job now is to take care of the wires and to do that well.
And they still make money off that too.
Oh, of course they do. They are regulated and they get a regulated rate of return for that work. Mm-hmm. They have never made money on the sale of kilowatt hours. So they will no longer be selling us kilowatt hours. We can buy them ourselves.
Well, this has been an absolutely fantastic conversation. Thank you so much for coming in today and for illuminating. I mean, it's not easy to go through these bills, but you made it sound really easy. And I'm no longer afraid to turn to that second page. So I'd like to really invite all of our listeners, if you didn't have your electric bill in front of you while listening to this podcast, go get it and take a closer look at it and, you know, really see, I mean, there's, you're going to find some interesting things in there. And so I guess don't be afraid to, you know, turn the page, take a closer look, and then start asking yourself some questions about, you know, how your energy is produced, how you use it, and how you can conserve it. Because I think that's something that's very important, even for what I learned today for solar, people who have solar panels like myself. So I'm not off the hook either.
You can make those kilowatt hours go an awful lot further.
Yes. All right. Well, Erica, thank you so much for everything that you do and that you have done in this space. It's just incredible. I'm so grateful that I met you along the way and that I have learned so much from you. And I know that you continue to do amazing work in this space. And so thank you for everything that you do and will continue to do to lead on climate on all of our behalf.
Oh, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure to be here.
If you like what you hear, don't forget to subscribe via Apple Podcasts, Spotify, TuneIn, Stitcher, and Google Podcasts, or find me at tinyclimate.com. Remember that small changes can lead to big results in ensuring a tiny climate. Look forward to seeing you soon.
Now, for the first time in my life, I truly believe my dreams are possible.